Welcome to a Juno Afternoon here on Monday, January 26th, 2015. I'm your host, Scott Burton. On today's show, Tara Lee Ellis and Lauren Anderson will be here to highlight activities at the Treadwell Ice Arena. We'll talk with Sarah Everett about her new production, Calico 2. KRNN DJ Phil Paramore will give us details about Wednesday's Guitar Obsession concert. And we'll talk with longtime Alaskan and Junoite Frank Sullivan Jr. about his Grammy Award nomination. Those interviews, National Native News, Writer's Almanac, Bird Note, music, and more, live at 3 right here on K2, repeated at 4 on KRNN, and live via ktoo.org.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The Menominee Nation says it's deciding what to do next now that Wisconsin Governor Scott Walker has blocked the tribe from opening an off-reservation casino. Chuck Kornbach of Wisconsin Public Radio reports.
The Menominee and Florida Seminoles have been asking Walker for more than a year to allow the tribes to open a casino and hard rock entertainment complex in Kenosha, Wisconsin. Walker said last Friday that he has rejected the application, contending state taxpayers would have had to make up revenue losses the Forest County Pottawatomie Casino in Milwaukee might have experienced if the Kenosha Casino opened. The Menominee argue they would have made payments to offset the losses. So Menominee Chairwoman Lori Bovine says the governor's decision is unfair.
We were wronged, and we are going to be reviewing our options to see what our next steps are. But the Menominee tribe is proud, and we're resilient.
Bovine says Governor Walker is too concerned about appealing to religious conservatives that want him to limit expansion of gaming as he explores a bid for the Republican nomination for president next year. Walker announced his decision about the Kenosha Casino just before speaking at a conservative political event in Iowa over the weekend. But Walker says politics had nothing to do with his rejecting the Menominee's plan.
If that's the case, I would have shut it down right off the bat. If it had been done for political reasons, I would have done it a long time ago.
The Menominee are also upset with the Forest County Pottawatomie, but Pottawatomie Attorney General Jeff Crawford says he agrees with Walker's determination that the Kenosha Casino would not have been in the best interests of Wisconsin. For National Native News, I'm Chuck Kornbach in Milwaukee.
Native leadership is joining with congressional Republicans to call for greater tribal sovereignty in energy policy. Matt Laszlo has a story from Washington.
In his State of the Indian Nation address, Brian Clatesby, president of the National Congress of American Indians, called for expanding tribal responsibility for energy resources. He's counting a change in law proposed by Senate Indian Affairs Committee Chairman John Barrasso to take into account the desire of Crow leadership to buck regulations and mine more coal.
But this is one of the energy issues that Barrasso talked about and I talked about, where we have to make sure that Indian country is at the table and their concerns are heard as this legislation goes forward, especially if it impacts the Crows, who, you know, have one of the highest unemployment rates in Indian country.
Montana Republican David Daines is new to the Senate and the Indian Affairs Committee. He says a change in environmental policy would help tribes like the Crow, even more than the broadened access to higher learning recently proposed by the White House.
Let the tribes, in an argument of their sovereignty, develop their natural resources, create jobs for their people. We need education, yes, but importantly, we need jobs once you get out of school.
Senator Barrasso is calling on lawmakers to amend the Indian Tribal Energy Development and Self-Determination Act. The NCAI says it would allow for greater development of renewable and traditional fuel sources. For National Native News, I'm Matt Laszlo in Washington.
Events across Australia recognize Survival Day. Aboriginal people recognize the day on January 26th, as others celebrate Australia Day or Invasion Day. It's when 11 ships arrived in Sydney in the 1700s. Aboriginal nations use the day to celebrate their culture and contributions.
Acknowledging and recognising the fact that our people have survived with all the atrocities and the things that, you know, the injustices. It is Invasion Day, but I think people have turned that around to a certain extent and call it survival.
For the Indigenous Australians, we see it as a day where, a point where our way of existence and way of life and freedom was almost annihilated. And so Survival Day is coming together and remembering that journey that our ancestors went through.
Those were just a couple voices featured on NITV. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation.
Support for this program is provided by the Native American Rights Fund, reminding you that sovereignty is not free. Native American Rights Fund has been helping Indian tribes for over 40 years with critical issues such as treaty enforcement, hunting and fishing rights, Indian child welfare, religious freedom, and more. You too can become a modern-day warrior with your support for NARF's work. Learn more at narf.org and join the fight for Native rights.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
Support for this station comes from Sitka's Fly-In Fish-In, offering 10 oceanfront rooms near downtown with a full-service bar, restaurant, wireless internet, and other amenities. Information is available at flyinfishin.com.
And you're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Monday, January 26th, 2015. It's about 6.5 minutes after the hour, and now in the studio is Tara Lee Ellis, the Southeast Alaska Coordinator for the Girl Scouts. Welcome, Tara Lee.
Thank you.
Nice to have you. And also with us is Lauren Anderson, the rink manager over at Treadwell. Lauren, how are you?
I'm good, Scott. Thanks.
Well, thanks for coming in, you two. I know the top thing that you want to talk about is your collaboration this Wednesday. Tell us about it.
We are teaming up with Treadwell, Girl Scouts of Alaska, with our CEO, who's coming down from Anchorage, Sue Perlez. She's a renowned short track speed skater and loves to show off her skills and teach people a little bit more about speed skating. And so we like to incorporate this event to have friends and family come down and join us and kind of get a look of what you can do on the ice.
Okay, so she'll be doing some sort of demonstrations. And
yeah, she'll do some demonstration. Even last year she was on the ice with the kids and everybody who came to watch and kind of led them through a couple laps of the short track.
That sounds like fun. What else will be going on that? What time does that start on Wednesday?
That's on Wednesday, January 28th from 6:30 to 8 o'clock. So this isn't only just for the Girl Scouts. This is for the whole community of Juneau and Douglas. And it's so much fun with Sue because you get an opportunity to get the form and the body positioning of speed skating, and although we don't have speed skates for people to use, you can do that in our regular hockey or figure skate, whichever you prefer. So it's an opportunity for everyone to get out there and skate.
Sounds like a lot of fun. Again, that starts at 6:30 this Wednesday?
Correct.
And a donation can be involved, right?
Yeah. So along with our partnership with the Girl Scouts, we're also offering a new pair of socks for the glory hole. And if you bring in a new pair of socks, you'll receive free skate rental for our open skate session.
Well, that sounds nice. And as far as the open skate session, Lauren, what will that look like? Like Sue will be doing her demonstration, and then how does it generally work after that?
Well, that'll be ongoing. And so people can, as they arrive, they can, once they get out on the ice, they can join Sue. It'll be informal. And so we'll be doing a couple of different laps, and they can just join Sue whenever they arrive and take a couple of laps with her. Along with our open skate time, we have our new fitness program, which people can participate in with Sue, and it's the Your Skate Your Way Around Alaska. And how it works is during any of our open skates, Wednesday's open skate included, you can start keeping track of your laps. So how it works is 11 laps equals 1 mile. So okay. If you'd like to go from Treadwell Arena to downtown Juneau, it's 22 laps. So people, we have clickers and people can keep track of their laps, and it's a new fitness program that we just started a couple weeks ago. So we hope you come out. And then we have our tracking cards that you can keep track of your miles and laps. And at the end of the season, which is April 12th, we'll have prizes for everybody. So it's a great opportunity, yeah, for people to come out and skate, meet Sue. Speed skating is all about laps, so it's a good combination.
But you did say that Wednesday is going to be informal, so I suspect skaters of all abilities are probably invited, right?
We're all ages, especially I know a couple Daisy Troops that are planning to be there, and they're the kindergarten first graders. And for Girl Scouts that do come and check in with me, they get a little free ice skating patch. So this shows for their vest or sash. So it should be a fun event, all levels. Last year they turned off the lights and they did a little disco skate. It was pretty fun.
And we can incorporate, it's not planned, but we can definitely incorporate that at the end of the session on Wednesday.
Yeah. We'd like people on the ice having fun.
Okay, it sounds like a lot of fun. That's this Wednesday from 6:30 to 8, give or take?
Yeah, 6:30 to 8. Adults are $6, youth are $5, seniors are $4, and skate rental is $2.25 or a new pair of socks donated for the glory hole.
Sounds like a good deal. And where should somebody go for more information, Lauren?
You can go to the Treadwell Arena website, and you can just Google Treadwell Arena, or you can give us a call at 586-0410.
Sounds good. Anything else on your radar that you'd like to share?
No, come skating.
All right. Thanks for coming in,
thanks.
You two. Have
Thank
a fun
you.
Time on Wednesday.
You know, the last thing they told me was, Billy, the ice is too thin. But I wouldn't listen, and just like a fool I fell in. And I can see the lights of my village burn bright in my mind. But I disobeyed nature, and now it's come my time. Late in October, I decided to go for a trip. Alone, I did walk, except my dog at my heels, she did nip. And I was out hunting rabbits when I crossed this frozen old slough. But the ice was too thin, and Lord, I did fall through. The water was shallow, I climbed out soaked to the bone. Laughing and shaking, I quickly started for home. But 2 miles is a long way when you're wet and it's 20 below. And I'd better start walking, 'cause I've got a long ways to go. You know, the last thing they told me was, Billy, the ice is too thin. But I wouldn't listen, and just like a fool I fell in. And I can see the lights of my village burn bright in my mind. But I've disobeyed nature, and now it's come my time. Blue jeans are frozen, dear Jesus, please save my soul. A fool on thin ice, God in heaven, now I'm so cold. And that faithful old dog, she stayed till the very end. And when sleep overtook me, I heard her howl in the wind. You know, the last thing they told me was, Billy, the ice is too thin.
And you're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Monday, January 26th, 2015. It's about 15 minutes after the hour. And now in the studio, she wears a few hats in this community, is actor, playwright, Sarah Everett. Welcome, Sarah. DJ. What else am I missing?
Director in this case, producer in the
actor.
Same case. Yes.
So,
yeah, wear lots of different hats. My theater degree from James Madison University is being well put to use here in the Juno
yes.
Arts community.
Always refreshing to have somebody using their degree. So, Sarah, you, among other things, you've produced, directed, acted in Calico, the
mm-hmm.
original, and now you're doing Calico 2. Why don't, for our listeners, you talk a little bit about the original Calico, how it came about, the name, and how it went, because I heard great things about it.
Sure, yeah. So Calico was a skit showcase that began a year ago. We performed actually in late May of 2014. And essentially what it was just an idea came to me in November of 2013. Hey, I want to do more in the community theatrically. And so what can I do? So I just randomly, just through the encouragement of my family, I came up with this idea of promoting just the ability for people here in Juneau, writers, actors, to come together and write stories and little plays to perform together. And I remember asking my dad at a restaurant one day, I said, Dad, I want to do this. I really want to do this. But what should I call it? And he just said, how about Calico? And I said, well, why? And he said, well, it's kind of like, you know, how on a cat, you've got the white, the black, the amber, the yellow. It's lots of different little things coming together to make a beautiful ensemble on one thing, one being. So the first Calico consisted of 6 skits, all written by myself, by other actors in the community. Roblin Gray Davis was involved in the original Calico production, and we had a great time. All 6 of the skits were really fun. The total show was about an hour and 15 minutes. We performed at the Gold Town Nickelodeon Theater. Thank you, Colette Costa. And it was a great success, great celebration, and so much so, in fact, that the Jack allowed me to have a grant to make Calico 2 this spring.
Outstanding. So, Calico 2, Reloaded,
that's
right?
That's right, Calico 2 Reloaded.
How's it shaping up? Let's see, you're going for 9 or 10 skits, is that right?
That's right, and so far we have 9.
I love some of these titles. Will you tell us about the titles?
Yes.
A lot of them speak for themselves,
yes, we've got one called Welcome to Social Disorder Camp. We've got one called Cranberry Juice. We've got Klingon for President, my dad's special show there. We've got The Worst Interpreter. But we've also got a special show that I've gained the rights for. It's The Lady of Shalott, and it's pretty special because I was able to contact Lorena McKennitt's music company, and we're going to use the song The Lady of Shalott that Lorena McKennitt adapted to music, and that is our script. And we're going to perform basically what the song says about that ancient tale about the Lady of Shalott.
And remind
music.
Us a little bit about that ancient tale.
It's the story of a woman in the medieval times. Her name was Elaine, and she was called the Lady of Shalott. And she essentially lived in a tower on an island. And one day she looks out of her magic mirror, and she sees knights coming down to Camelot. Now, she's not allowed to look out the window, only allowed to look through the mirror. And one day she sees Sir Lancelot, and she looks out the window, and the curse comes upon her. And the tale goes that she leaves her tower of Shalott, goes into a boat, and floats down the river and dies, and floats into Shalott, and she's heralded and welcomed into Camelot as the most beautiful woman they've ever seen. It's just it's a beautiful medieval tale, and it's based on fact, actually. And I was so engrossed and enchanted by the song when I heard it last summer for the first time, and I was like, I've got to make this into a skit. So I contacted Lorena McKennitt, and I gained the rights for the song, and now we're going to make a theatrical skit out of it. So it's going to be a lot of fun.
That sounds great. Was it challenging to communicate with her, or was she easygoing? explain that?
Very easygoing. I talked to her company, primarily Quinlan Road, and they were like, wow, no one's ever asked to use this song for a theatrical piece before. So we just finalized all the paperwork, so that's going to be our special skit towards the end of Calico 2 after all of the other fun, wonderful skits that have been written.
That sounds great. You said Roblin Gray Davis was part of the original Calico. Who mm-hmm. are some of the folks you have lined up in this one?
I've got an original cast member, Derek Swanson, who is going to be in a couple of the skits. He's actually going to be Sir Lancelot in The Lady of Shalott. I've got lots of kids from theater at Latitude 58 who have written and are involved in the acting and of other skits. My dad is performing his Klingon for President skit. I'll be acting in one skit that I wrote about James Madison. And my little brother, Samuel, is going to act too. My mom is. Lots of people. This cast is far bigger than the original cast, in fact. So it's going to be a really great time.
And the actual production is going to be in early May?
That's right. Yeah, we're actually performing May 1st, 2nd, and 3rd at the Goldtown Theater.
And for Calico 2, you have support from the Juno Arts and Humanities Council, right?
That's right. Yeah, they have given us a grant to produce this show, and they're my sponsor. And actually, if anyone is interested in hearing more about Calico 2, just in a couple hours, from 5 to 7, I will be at the Juno Arts and Humanities Council giving a formal presentation about Calico 2 and my hopes for it, what's going to come perhaps after Calico 2, and just the vision of the entire experience.
Sounds great. Sarah, you spend a lot of time in theater. What is it about theater that attracted you and keeps you working in it?
Well, I think it's the best way that I feel like I express myself. I love characters. I love stories. And I find, even since I was little, I've always found myself attracted to the very idea of becoming another person or becoming another character to basically inspire and encourage and teach others, which is one reason why, of many reasons why, I'm also a historical interpreter. I professionally interpret James Madison, as many people know here in town. I went to James Madison University. I was their mascot as James Madison for a while, which is why he's going to make a special appearance in Calico 2 also. So there's just something about becoming another person or becoming another character that I feel that is a real strength of mine. It's a gift that I have. And people tell me when I'm dressed as Madison, oh, I couldn't even tell it was you. You're James Madison. I mean, there's no question that that's who I am in that moment. So when I take on a character or a role or even, you know, as a director, I just embrace that entire world. So it's something I've always been passionate about.
And may I ask, James Madison, why did you become attracted to him?
That's a loaded question. Well, I went to school here at JDHS, and I was in Miss Galuzzo's class. Some of you probably know Miss Galuzzo. And she had us do a presidential paper project. This was like 8 years ago when I was a junior in high school. And I picked my president as James Madison. And I can't really describe exactly what happened, except for the fact that when I first saw his picture on that president poster that we were doing, I was immediately drawn to just the very image of him. I didn't know anything about him at the time, which is hard to believe now, because now I can answer any question on Madison, no problem there. But I was really drawn to the image of him, and I began my research, I did my project, and he is a president and a founding father who is so underestimated. He is not very well known. He's not very revered, except for the fact that people thought he was a political mind and not much of a man. He was very shy. He wasn't a person who liked limelight, so Thomas Jefferson, his best friend, got a lot of attention. And he was small, my height, 5'4". And I essentially became a very passionate young James Madison scholar. I've engulfed myself within these past 7-8 years in the world of Madison at Montpelier, at JMU. Ralph Ketchum, who is an authoritative Madison scholar, he is my mentor. He and I talk Madison all the time, and he's 85. He's a wonderful fun. but yeah, Madison is definitely part of my life, and people know me for that. And I love sharing his legacy with people.
And he will have a guest appearance, it sounds like, at
That's
Calico 2.
That's right, in Calico 2. So you'll get a taste of a bit of my legacy and Mr. Madison's in this show.
Okay, so again, this is in early May, 1st, 2nd, and 3rd at the Gold Town Nick.
That's right.
Are you still looking for resources, actors, writing, anything?
Absolutely. I would love to have a 10th skit if someone would like to write a skit. More actors. I'd love to have more actors. I'm pretty well full up at the moment, but I would love to have more people involved, especially with The Lady of Shalott, which is the really big special piece. So, if anyone's interested, if you're an actor here in town and you want to do a little bit of extra something on the side, maybe get a bit of a stipend from the work that we're going to do for Calico 2, yeah, please contact me. I'd love to have you involved. I'd love for you to write something if you'd like.
And what's the best way to get in contact with you?
You can contact me through my website, sarahmariaeverett.com. That's Sarah with an H. Or you can find my information on the krnn.org website for my DJ profile. Or you can contact the Jack, thejack.org, and find out more information about Calico 2 and contact me there.
Yeah, and I found you on Facebook pretty easily, too.
Yeah.
And Calico 2 as well.
Just look for a Christopher Lloyd profile page. That's me. Christopher Lloyd is my all-time hero for acting.
Well, Sarah, it's been a pleasure. Thanks for coming on the show today. If you want to learn more, you can go to her. Is that a one-night stand presentation at the Jack as part of an artist grant?
Tonight, yes.
Tonight, yep.
Yep,
so
tonight from 5 to 7. Yeah, please feel free to come and ask questions and see if you want to get involved.
All right. Anything else, Sarah? Anything we're missing?
No, I think that's it. I'm really excited for this show. I think it's going to be bigger and better than the original Calico, and I hope Juno embraces it.
Thanks, Sarah.
Thanks.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Monday, the 26th of January, 2015. It was on this day, 1784, Benjamin Franklin wrote a letter to his daughter saying that he did not think the eagle should be the symbol of America. He described it as a bird of bad moral character. A much better symbolic fowl, Benjamin Franklin said, would be the turkey, a true original native of America, much more respectable bird. It's the birthday of Jules Pfeiffer, born in the Bronx, 1929, the cartoonist, the novelist, and playwright. Jules Pfeiffer, who said of his childhood, "The only thing I wanted to be was grown up, because I was a terrible flop as a child. You cannot be a successful boy in America if you cannot throw or catch a ball." Decided early on he wanted to be a comic strip artist, went to work for a cartoonist named Will Eisner, and then started writing his own cartoons in the pages of The Village Voice. It's the birthday of Sean McBride, born in Paris, 1904. He's the son of Maud Gonn, the woman whom William Butler Yeats was in love with and wanted desperately to marry. Sean McBride's father was Major John McBride, an Irish nationalist and patriot who was executed for helping to lead the Easter Rising, the 1916 rebellion, trying to force the end of British rule of Ireland. Sean McBride joined the IRA. He fought in the Irish War of Independence, was imprisoned by the Irish Free State, and when he got out of jail, he went to law school, worked as a lawyer for human rights cases around the world, investigating abuses by governments against civilians, especially ones in times of war. He was one of the founders of the human rights group Amnesty International, and for that he was given the Nobel Peace Prize in 1974. Here's a poem for today by Wesley McNair, Happiness. Why, Dot asks, stuck in the back seat of her sister's two-door, her freckled hand feeling the roof for the right spot to pull her wide self up onto her left, the unarthritic ankle. Why does her sister, coaching outside on her cane, have to make her laugh so she flops back just as she was, though now looking wistfully out through the restaurant reflected in her back window, she seems bigger and couldn't possibly mean we should go ahead in without her. She'll be all right. And so when you finally place the pillow behind her back and lift her right out into the sunshine, all four of us are happy, none more than she, who straightens the blossoms on her blouse, says how nice it is to get out once in a while, and then goes in to eat with the greatest delicacy, oh, I could never finish all that, and aplomb, the complete roast beef dinner with apple crisp and ice cream, just a small scoop. Happiness, a poem by Wesley McNair from The Town of No and My Brother Running, published by David R. Godin and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by Lumosity.com, personalized brain training developed by neuroscientists to challenge memory and problem solving through online games, Lumosity.com. And by Progressive Insurance, working to make progress for more than 75 years. And by LegalZoom, providing legal solutions for business owners, including corporate filings and legal plans, featuring attorney contract review and tax advice. Legal help is at LegalZoom.com. Produced by Joy Biles, assisted by Kathy Roach. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Join us for Guitar Obsession, the next KRNN Spotlight Music Series concert. With Soundings host Phil Paramore, guitarists Mark Hurd, Ben Higdon, Justin Smith, John Unsicker, and Cray Van Kirk will pick, slide, hammer on, pull off, and bend guitar strings like only they know how. Wednesday, January 28th, 7 p.m. at the Goldtown Theater. Tickets at krnn.org. You're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Monday, January 26th, 2015. It's about 30 minutes after the hour, and now in the studio with me is KRNN DJ from the Sounding Show, Phil Paramore, here on Mondays. Welcome, Phil.
Hi, Scott. How you doing?
I am doing well. It's nice to have you over here in Studio A.
All right. It's a pleasure to be here. A little bit different view over here.
At least 12 feet.
From where I normally am.
Absolutely.
Uh-huh.
Phil, let's start. We're going to talk about this concert that we're doing on Wednesday night. I think that's going to be a lot of fun. Tell us a little bit about the show you do on Monday mornings.
Monday mornings, I do soundings, and soundings is mostly jazz and blues, but we wander all over the musical map, as I'd like to say, and we'll play a little bit of everything, so I try to stay in touch with people here and there and try to take requests when possible, and Lisa usually stops in and chats it up with me, so it's a lot of fun. It's kind of a family affair.
Yeah, well, it sounds fun. I think I heard some Harrison B., among other things, this morning. Who are some other artists you like to play?
Harrison B., I like to stick with, Buddy Guy is one of my favorites. Johnny Winter. I really like Roy Gallagher, Roy Buchanan. More recently, I've started to listen to, I've been influenced basically by my son Cole, who's a drummer, and my other son Paul, who's, they're just into music basically, so. Their influences on me are varied, and every time when they come in town, they'll often slip into the studio, play a bunch of their music, and often I can't remember what it was, but I like all of it.
That's great, and I bet they learn from you as well.
It's interesting because they play a lot of the stuff I used to listen to in high school.
Uh-huh.
It's popular now. It has been popular for some time. It's just all the old, traditional groups, the Beatles and Aerosmith and Elton John, Michael Jackson, all that great music. You kind of forget about it. So when I get a chance to get in here on Mondays and throw, I can't help myself. One song reminds me of another, and then another, and another, and off we go.
Oh, good. Well, we're glad to have you. Thanks for running that show.
Yeah.
And so the show on Wednesday is called Guitar Obsession. It's going to be at 7 o'clock at the Goldtown Theater. It's going to be a lot of fun. You're going to host. You have you like guitars a lot, don't you?
I do.
Tell us about your relationship with the guitar.
Well, it's interesting. I'm glad you use that term because that's what this show is about. It's about these musicians' relationship with the guitar and the music they're going to play. So I kind of understand the guitar from a little bit different perspective. I was so happy to be asked to be a part of this show because I make musical instruments, cigar box guitars and solid body electric guitars, and I made a bass guitar. And so I kind of understand the technicalities of the instrument, but I don't play. And so I'm always so enamored and so in awe of these people that have this gift, and they're able to make the instruments actually have a voice. And it, the nuances of the playing are all in the hands of the player, and it's taken these folks so long to be as accomplished as they are, and in such an intimate environment as we'll have here at the Nickelodeon, to be up close and personal, to see a variety of music played in a variety of styles, I think is going to be tremendous. I'm really excited about it. I'm really looking forward to it.
Yeah, this is going to be a really fun show. If you haven't had a chance to go to a Karen N. Spotlight concert before, like Phil said, it is in the intimate setting of the Gold Town Theater. You have Betsy running sound, so you know it's going to sound amazing. Although you don't need a ton of extra sound help in there, but she finds a nice balance between the ambient sound and amplification, very tasteful. And then you have a host, like in this case it'll be Phil, who I heard you say on your show this morning, you're going to talk, but not too much.
I want to let the music do the talking, as Lisa said this morning. It's always interesting, and you could ask these performers so many questions about so many different things, but the bottom line is they're up there to play, and people, I think, come to listen. And so there, I think there'll be probably a few anecdotal stories, some information that the performers themselves want to relay. There may be a few questions between songs, but it'll be relatively brief. So there's going to be four sets, 20 to 25 minutes each, and a couple of set changes in between there. So you're looking at probably an hour and 45, 2 hours show.
Sounds good. And so we have John Unsicker.
Right. John's going to play a nylon string. He's going to play South American music in the style of
Django Reinhardt.
Django Reinhardt. And he's going to be accompanied by his son Guy, who's going to play rhythm guitar on a few songs with him. So I haven't seen Guy in a while. I'm looking forward to playing. Usually see him with the big old electric bass in his hands. So I'm looking forward to, okay, that's going to be a treat. And Justin
Smith or Ben Higdon.
Ben. Yeah.
All right, last time I saw Ben play was with Dan Kirkwood band at one of these Karen N. Spotlight concerts. What a tasty guitar player. Very simple, melody-driven picking, beautiful guitar and amp, very tasty guitar player. I'm excited to see what he's going to do on Wednesday as well.
See, and understand too, Scott, that this there's not going to be any vocals in this show. This is just the guitar. And like I said, it's a little bit about the relationship with the guitar that the musician has. So I ask them just to play what you think the audience would like to hear. I want this to be very free-flowing and very relaxed, and these guys to feel really comfortable. And as I said, the nuances of playing, they're all in the fingers, and it'll amaze you what these guys can do.
Yeah, and Mark Hurd and Justin Smith.
Right, Mark Hurd, I've heard play the blues primarily, and he's a great player. I know Mark as a really good athlete and a basketball player, and somebody who I've known for many, many years. I didn't really know how good a guitar player he was until I heard him in the last few years. Holy smokes, knocked me out. And then Justin, he's really an accomplished player. He's been around. He's played with a lot of great blues players, played in several bands. He has recently become interested in playing with percussion or a percussionist, and actually hip-hop loops and those types of influences. So he's going to play all original music, music that hasn't been probably heard before, maybe even played live, and he will be accompanied also by a percussionist. And I think he's going to have a bass drum and a hi-hat or a bass drum and a snare. I'm not sure exactly which one, or maybe all three pieces, but I think just two of the pieces. And so that's going to be really interesting.
It really is. It's hard to say where the night's going to go, really. It's going to be a pleasant surprise, I suspect.
It will. It will be great. They're all really good people, really good musicians, and it's definitely something to look forward to.
Absolutely. So that's this Wednesday night, January 27th, 7 p.m. at the Goldtown Theater. Tickets are on sale at krnn.org or ktoo.org. I think they're about $10. And these tickets go fast.
They do. They sell out a lot on the KRNN and Spotlight series, and I wouldn't be surprised if this one was to sell out. These guys are great, and you don't get to see some of them play very often. So just take advantage of it while you can.
Well, looking forward to it, Phil. Thanks for coming in. Are we missing anything?
Boy, not that I can think of, Scott. Thank you so much. I appreciate the opportunity to be here.
Yeah, thanks for coming. See ya. Frank Sullivan Jr. and the Dirty Kitchen. Frank Sullivan and Dirty Kitchen with No Life in This Town off of their record Cold Spell. And now on the telephone with me is Frank Sullivan Jr. himself. Frank, how are you?
Oh, man, I'm doing good, man. Geez, thanks for having me on.
Yeah, welcome, welcome. And for our listeners...
Send them a new record. Woohoo!
Yeah. Hey, Frank, for our listeners that may not know about your Alaska connection, can we start there? Tell us a little bit about your history here in the state and in Juneau.
All right. Well, shoot, I moved to Alaska when I was a teenager and lived up there for about a decade and played a lot of music with, Ginger Boatwright up there and, Carl Hoffman, all kinds of people that, I was looking up to when I was a teenager and then formed a band called Rank Strangers, played a lot with them. And actually our bass player now, Danny Booth, his dad, Greg Booth, was in that band. And, lived up there for, until 2003 and then moved to D.C. area, Alexandria, Virginia, to be in the United States Navy band. I auditioned for a position out east and then offered me the job. Next thing you know, I'm doing push-ups in boot camp and reporting for duty.
And now
I'm no longer there.
And now you're based in D.C. and you're playing with Frank Sullivan and Dirty Kitchen, and you have just been nominated, or your album has been nominated for Best Bluegrass for a Grammy, Frank, for a Grammy.
Oh, my gosh, I know. It's pretty exciting.
Congratulations.
Best Bluegrass album. I know. I mean, thanks, man. It's really cool. That song is the gift that keeps on giving, I suppose. Cold Spell, actually just... That song won the overall prize in the Mid-Atlantic Songwriting Contest last night. We were awarded another thing for that. And then here not too long ago in September, the band was awarded from the International Bluegrass Music Association Instrumental Group of the Year, which, I mean, it's all like coming on down the pike, and it's kind of amazing and wild, you know. It's kind of a wild little ride here going on, and everybody in the band is just such a killer musician, you know, and playing with those guys is like, you know, let's just say dreams do come true.
Yeah, and speaking of the bands, you got Danny Booth, he's from Anchorage, Alaska.
That's right, yeah.
On bass, and Mike Mumford on the banjo.
Yeah, Mike Mumford on the banjo, and Chris Luquette from Seattle is on the guitar. And we had some ringer kind of guests on the new record, too. Leon Alexander came in and played some percussion and drums, and then on a track or two. And then Sam Bush and John Cowan and Rob Ikes also came in and blessed the recording with their talents.
And if you don't happen to be a bluegrass head or a progressive string music head, those are all stars right there for sure.
Pretty much, yeah. Yeah, we're stoked, man.
And I'm trying to think, so you basically this lineup, this quartet that you're with right now, you guys played at the Goldtown Theater. I'm trying to think when that concert was.
You know, that was like 3 years ago.
Wow.
If you can believe it. That was the first little tour that Chris, we were needing a guitar player to fill in, and Danny on the bass had just been with the band like about a month and a half or 2 months maybe. And we needed somebody to fill in on guitar because our guitar player was going on to kind of do more, you know, settle down a little bit more, and the band was really wanting to take off. And so I had met Chris at a festival in Seattle, and then we jammed in Nashville at this conference. And then, saw him again and whatnot, and we talked on the phone, and we did a little tour out in the Northwest, and he came in, and we played in a hotel room together, and I was like, man, in a couple months, do you mind, could you learn a few tunes and do a little Alaska tour with us? And so he sure did, and the next thing right after that tour, we played at a festival in Seattle called Wintergrass, and that was where we announced him being an official member of the band. I was like, as soon as the Alaska tour was over, I said, hey, so the job is yours if you want. Let's just talk it through, and we did, and... Here we are, 3 years later, you know, with the same quartet. It's the best music I've ever played.
Speaking of the best music you've ever played, what I like about you guys, among other things, you can play traditional bluegrass if you want, a Jimmy Martin tune, anytime, no problem. But you guys are doing a lot of new stuff. I thought maybe we could spin a tune for our listening audience right now to kind of show them what you're doing. We just heard that the first song off Cold Spelled called Say It Ain't... Oh, wait. No Life in This Town, right?
Yeah.
What would be a good example to play right now that might sort of exemplify what's getting you excited on this CD?
Well, it's funny, man, because each song is has a different kind of vibe. But I would say, you know, if you went track to track to track from the first song on down, you know, it takes you for a little bit of a ride. I would say play the first one, Say It Isn't So, and that would kind of lead you into the next one and then into the next one. It's kind of built that way to listen to it as an album, you know. Even though each song, I feel, stands, you know, on its own, but, you know, it's definitely a project that was, you know, mindfully put together in that way, you know, in the sequencing, at least, you know.
All right. Well, let's spin a little piece of Say It Ain't So, and then we'll come back and talk about it.
All right, man.
Trying to kill me. Heart keeps beating. When it's broken, heartache, heartbreak. Let go of spoken. Left out in the cold.
That sounds real good. Your cousin Megan's on that song, isn't she?
Yeah, she actually wrote that song.
Oh, wow. And who else is on the... Rob Ikes?
Rob Ikes is on the Resophonic slide guitar, yep. Also known as Dobro. the rest of the band.
Yeah. If you had to define... I know it's not always fun to label stuff, but if you had to define your sound these days, how would you do it?
Well, I probably first start telling people that I don't really care to be pigeonholed too much because really all I want to do is just make good music for people to enjoy and, you know, not only have it be meaningful for me, but have it be meaningful for the listener in a way that is maybe different than any other bands, you know, can provide for them. So, I don't know. I feel like it's, you know... so many different diversities going together, you know, from all of us in the band, you know, from rock and blues to, you know, straight up bluegrass to, you know, soul, maybe, country music, all kinds of stuff. You know, we just come from so many different backgrounds and we come together and we're not really like trying to play a certain style. We're just trying to play what we play. And, apparently the Grammys, which is very cool, the Recording Academy decided that it was worthy of being in the best bluegrass album category, so there you go. So, I mean, for all practical purposes, we are a bluegrass band, you know, but I think there's something for everybody in what we play. I don't know. Maybe that's a little winded of a description, but... that's kind of where I'm at these days, I guess, with it.
No, that's a good answer. And, you know, I heard Mike Mumford say something to the extent of, we each bring to the band music that moves us. And I think that's a good idea rather than trying to play to a certain genre. You're playing music that you're passionate about.
Yeah, I mean, I think people respond to that, you know. If you're playing in front of people and you're just sitting there straight-faced and not moving and not enjoying yourself, well, nobody's going to enjoy what you're playing, you know. So it's like when I go to a concert and I watch a band, man, I want to be entertained, one, you know, that's what's going on, you know, and also, you know, really connect somehow, and that's kind of what I'm trying to do. You know, you wear your heart out on your sleeve when you play and sing and just let it all hang out. And then, you know, if the listener or the person watching you is feeling that vibe, then they're going to respond in a positive way, which in turn feeds you more, which in turn feeds them more. It's just like cyclical, almost mass psychosis, for lack of a better word. You know, you all work together for the same thing, which is a good time. And, you know, hopefully that's how everybody feels when they come and hear us play or listen to our recordings or whatever, you know.
If someone wants to listen to a recording in person, where's the best place to get the CD Cold Spell?
Well, if somebody wanted to do that, they could find our website, dirtykitchenband.com, on the interwebs, or Facebook, or, you know, Twitter, or Instagram, or whatever. They could follow us anywhere. But best place to go is probably right directly to the website, and or iTunes. I mean, people go to iTunes, they get their music that way, too, you know. They can go to Compass Records. That's a label that we're on. But if, you know, Amazon, whatever, it's all out there.
And let's see, the 57th annual Grammys, Sunday, February 8th. Is it in L.A., right?
Yeah.
Are you going?
Oh, man, yeah, I'm definitely going. Whole band's going. You know, my wife Leah is going, and it's going to be awesome. Really excited.
And let's see, Rhonda Vincent is, you're competing with Rhonda Vincent, Brian Sutton, among others. How do you feel about your chances?
Oh, man, you know, oh gosh.
Tough question.
I think tough question to answer, but you know what I mean? It's like everybody has their strengths in that category. You know, there's the Earls of Leicester. There's, you know, people go, well, you know, some people go, well, who's that? And, well, you know, a few members of the band are, you know, part of Alison Krauss and Station's band, so they have that kind of machine behind them. Tim O'Brien was on that recording. Then you got Brian Sutton and Noam Pikilny with two records, and, you know, Rhonda Vincent and us. And they all have their strengths and their fan bases and all of those things. But, you know, really, if you're going to be objective and listen to the music straight down, you know, I tried to do that with the categories I voted for, and just listen to the music and be really objective, I think we have a pretty good chance, you know, if the voting audience did just that, you know.
Well, Frank, good luck. I wish we had more time to talk, but we're running out of time here. I wish
right
you the best of luck on February 8th. We'll all be watching.
Thanks, man. I appreciate it. Yeah, you can tune in. I think the Bluegrass Award is going to be earlier in the day and streamed online on the Grammy website.
Okay.
So, yeah, man.
Well
thanks
luck.
For the opportunity to you know, talk about myself. Anyway, thanks so much, Scott. And howdy to everybody in Juneau, if you would. Send my love to everybody.
Will do, Frank. Good luck, and we'll talk to you soon.
All right, pal. Bye-bye.
Afternoon, we'll find out about Thursday's open house at the Juneau Cooperative Extension Office. Maya Wolf from Discovery Southeast will be here with a preview of Saturday's Backcountry Film Festival. We'll highlight Big Brothers Big Sisters and National Mentoring Month. And Steve Coxis will be here with details about this month's Marie Drake Planetarium presentation. That Writer's Almanac, Bird Note Music, and more. If you missed the show, it's also available at 4 p.m. on KRNN and online at ktoo.org.